plan on flying? It's time to upgrade to a real ID. Because in order to board domestic flights, your driver's license or state-issued ID must be a real ID, or you'll need another acceptable form of identification. So don't wait. Find out how to get your real ID at tsa.gov/real ID. That's tsa.gov/real ID. Or visit your local DMV. And then you'll be cleared for takeoff.
Hi, it's time for FitzDog Radio. That means, of course, it's about a day before it airs. I usually record on Monday or Tuesday, goes up on Wednesday. So I don't know what's going to happen by Wednesday, but right now I'm in Los Angeles. We're okay. I guess we got the LAPD. I guess we got state police. I guess we got ICE. I think that covers it. I don't think National Guard is that. There was like one protest about 15 miles south of here. I mean, people are peacefully demonstrating all over. And now they're talking about the Marines. It almost seems like Trump is trying to cause a distraction from other stuff that might be going on right now. I don't know. That's just off the top of my head. Let's not get into it. Who cares? It'll all work out. It's all going to work out. Gavin Newsom may be in jail. That'll be interesting. There is a Brazilian comedian, this guy named Leo Lins, who I guess did some material that the government found inappropriate. Wasn't even talking about politics. He was talking about black people, fat people, different races, elderly people, people with disabilities. Anyway, they put him in jail for 8 years. So, hey, why don't we get the National Guard out of LA and send them to Austin, Texas? Round those guys up, because they are all doing it. All right, so I wrote some monologue jokes because I'm submitting them to a TV show. Here's my story. You want to know my story? I've written for TV for 20 years. And out of the 20 years that I've been writing, I qualified for health coverage 16 of those years, which means you have to make over, it's like $45,000 a year in writing income. And then they give you free health coverage for the year. You're covered by an amazing insurance policy. WGA has a great insurance policy. You pay almost nothing and you get amazing coverage. Anyway, if you get 17 years of coverage, doesn't have to be in a row, any 17 years, you get free coverage for the rest of your life. You no longer have to qualify. I have 16 out of 17 years. And I currently, and I'm not exaggerating, this is what I pay. I pay $40,000 a year in health coverage for me and my wife and two kids. So it's a strain. It's a drain. It's a pain. It's a lot. So, I'm up for a monologue writing job, and if I get it, I will qualify for coverage for the rest of my life. So I spent the weekend writing monologue jokes. It's a possibility. Had a meeting with them already, and they're waiting to see the jokes. If I don't get it, I'm going to be pretty depressed. There's not a ton of writing jobs for slightly older comics at this point, men especially, white, straight. Our phones are not ringing off the hook these days, so this could be good. Anyway, here's some of the jokes I wrote that I did not include in the packet that I submitted. Because, you know, maybe they're too edgy or maybe they just weren't funny enough. But here's the leftover jokes. President Trump has revoked security protection for former health official Anthony Fauci. Fauci plans to protect his life by keeping his distance from strangers and wearing a mask. All right. That's not bad. How about this one? The State Department has halted the scheduling of new visa interviews for foreign students hoping to study in the U.S. High school teachers everywhere said, there goes my ping pong team and the science fair and our chance at winning the spelling bee and the quiz bowl. Great. Now who are my kids going to cheat off of? Now that the only reason I put it in is I feel like, are they going to just assume I'm talking about Chinese kids, which I'm not. Indian kids are smarter than us. British. Oh, most of them, actually. So, and they all play ping pong. Anyway, Pope Leo will speak at a show in the stadium where the Chicago White Sox play. They say it'll be the first time in, you know, the White Sox suck right now. They say it'll be the first time in years someone in that stadium says the words Jesus and Christ without screaming fuck in between. Without screaming fucking. Yeah, maybe that's why I didn't put it in. To rein in spending, the Department of Labor will cut overtime pay for millions of workers next week. In response, President Trump asked, what's overtime? After the fallout with Musk, Trump is still bringing this with the white South Africans to the U.S., but now it's just a layover on their flight to El Salvador. That'll show them. The Supreme Court heard arguments in a case requiring websites that publish sexual material to verify the age of its users. When they heard about this, American teens were up in arm. Get it? This is the one time when a teenager actually wants to find his dad's porn. In recent days, dating apps have started using a height filter. Women on Tinder and Hinge are seeking men who are 6 feet and bigger, while on Grindr, 6 inches will still get you in the door. Ba-boom. Cock joke. Not going to use it on late night TV. Reports. No, that one's stupid. Trump has named himself chairman of the Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts. The Sound of Music is being considered, but Musk is insisting the Nazis are now the good guys. Now that he's booking the acts for the Kennedy Center, I'm sure Trump's favorite band, the Village People, will be asked to perform. Not sure if they'll accept. The band is a construction worker affected by steel tariffs, an Indian whose land is being fracked, and a guy who's been kicked out of the Navy for being gay. That's it. Maybe I'll just write monologue jokes for the podcast from now on. Would that be fun? I don't know. Those weren't the best ones. Those were the rejects. Where do you see the ones that got in? Oh, my God. If you want to hear more jokes from me, I'll be in Sacramento this weekend with Louis C.K. performing a couple shows. Torrance, California at the End on June 29th. Austin, Texas at the Mothership, July 4th through the 6th. Pottstown, PA at Soul Joel's, July 31st. Point Pleasant, New Jersey, Uncle Vinny's, August 1st and 2nd. Then I'll be at La Jolla in August, Denver, Connecticut, Vegas, Chicago, New Orleans for Skankfest. Go to fitzdog.com, pick up some tickets, come out and say hi. Also want to give a shout out to Sleepy Hollow Coffee Roasters. Oh my God, do you like the vibrant taste of fresh blueberries? That's Katrina from Sleepy Hollow Coffee Roasters. Maybe you want your espresso delivered with a jolt of flavors and sweet nuttiness melting into rich dark chocolate. That's the awakening of Ichabod. Go to sleepyhollowcoffeeroasters.com by June 1st. Enter promo code FIT. Oh, did that expire? Oh, well, do it anyway. Forget the promo code. My buddy launched this company. It's amazing coffee. Give it a shot. sleepyhollowcoffeeroasters.com. All right. My guest today is a dear old friend. He's been on this podcast many times. He always slaughters. He is so free. He is so uninhibited and truthful. And self-examined and a work in progress. He's a broken toy with a good heart. A little manic. Used to be married to Roseanne Barr. Maybe he's still recovering from that. He was in the movies True Lies, Carpool. He was on the best damn sports show, period, which I loved him on. He was in Sons of Anarchy. Anyway, you know him. You love him. Here is Tom Arnold. When I think of the great guests in the history of FitzDog Radio, and I've been doing this show for 14 years.
Wow.
You've been so generous over the years to come in and give me your time and give me your energy and your fucking silliness. Mm-hmm. And you're back.
I'm back. It's good to be back, buddy.
Yeah.
I love you. It's good to be here.
Yeah.
This shirt is not flattering. This is a exercise shirt, but it shows my tits and everything.
Yeah, you know what's not flattering at what's this age? Our bodies.
Oh, yeah, no, that's bad.
Our appearance is not flattering.
Right, that's right. But you don't really have to look at yourself. I just look at my eyes.
Yeah.
In the mirror.
Yeah.
Because if I look too closely, it's awful. You know, we have cameras. Kids and I, I'm a single dad, but kids are 12 and 9. We have 21 cameras inside and outside the house. And
21?
Yeah. People are like, yeah, that's the LA crime. And I'm like, oh, no. No, because their mom will break into the house. I swear to God, all day. But also, I looked at myself. I've taken my clothes off and then played back what it looks like from behind. Yes, you know.
Behind is a rough one. Oh. My ass. I grew up playing hockey, and I used to roller. I lived in New York City for 10 years, and I literally would rollerblade everywhere.
Yeah.
Upper West Side, down to the Village, Upper East, in the same day. My ass, you could bounce a quarter off of it.
Yeah.
Round.
Yeah,
yeah. Tight. Yeah. And then I looked in the mirror the other day, and I have old man ass. You know, that little sag to
it? That weird skin that gets like, crickly.
Yeah, and I realized, like, I never really worked. I've worked out, but it's always upper body. I've never worked on my legs, and now I think it's time.
Most people do that. Arnold says most people do that. They have little tight legs.
Yeah. You always look at the calves when I see the ripped guys.
Absolutely.
There's only so much you can do with an ankle.
Yeah.
Ankle's not getting any bigger.
Yeah, no. No, but you know, it's good to, I wish I would have stretched more when I was younger.
Right.
Because stretching is a thing. People that live to be 105, they're dancers or stretchers.
Yeah.
You know, not that I want to live to be 105, but you know.
How old would you like to be when you go?
Well, you know, again, my kids are 12 and 9. I'd like to see them
now?
Through. I'm 66.
Yeah.
You know, I like to live as long as I can.
Yeah.
You know, my daughter's like, Daddy, how old will you be when I go to college? And I'm like, 75. She's like, I'm not going to college, Dad. I go, that's my girl.
Yeah.
I hope my kids live with me forever.
Yeah. I used to think that I wanted to live to be 100. I think 83, and I'd like to punch out. Like, did it. Mm-hmm. House is paid off.
Right. But you start, when you get close to 83, you're like, I got a couple more in me. Here's the thing. Guys like us, we never stop. Like, not that we're like Clint Eastwood, but he's directed a movie. He's 95.
I heard that.
Yeah. He's still, Robert Redford's 88. He's out there killing it. Jane Fonda, who I know pretty well, is 87. And she's definitely fuckable.
She is.
Did I say that on the air? Oh, she definitely is.
Yeah.
And she's killing it. Like, I saw her daughter I went to the pediatrician with my daughter, and her daughter's at a drugstore. She said, hey, Tom. I see. I go, hey, what? She lives in Vermont. What are you doing out here? She goes, you won't believe it. My mother asked me to come out, Jane Fonda, and do an intense therapy weekend so she could learn how to be a better mother.
No.
I swear to God.
And
it made me cry.
What,
she's probably 60. Got to be 60.
60 years old and she's still working on the relationship?
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
That is beautiful.
Wow.
That's amazing.
I feel like it. I mean, I constantly, like, my son is about to move to New York to get a job. And me and my wife spend a lot of time talking about how do we nurture him and push him without, you always want to keep the communication open. You want them to feel non-judged so that they come to you, you know? And so it's that fine line between not making them feel judged, but also like not being soft. Like I really feel like the parent has a lot to do with how hard the kid pushes themselves.
Yeah.
And I feel like sometimes we've been too West Side LA understanding and not enough like goals you have to accomplish. How do you do that with your daughter? Like, what? Because she's
She's 9, and she still digs hanging out with me, which is which, you know, people are like, when she's a teenager, she'll hate you, and I go, when she's a teenager, I'll be like senile.
Right.
You know, you do. My son too. You don't push him into anything. He plays football. My son is in fifth grade. He's 6'1", 230.
Get out of here.
Size 14 shoes.
What?
Like, he comes right up on me, like, chesty.
No shit.
And it reminds me, when I was young, I had a single dad, too.
You played football, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes. And I was young. One time we lived on a farm, but my dad had so many freaking rules. He made me cut my hair. And I'm like, fuck you. Me and you, right now, I'll back. Like, for real. And he's like, really? And he goes, let me do one thing. He kind of measured his... It just kind of rubbed up against with that hard knuckle of his, and that hurt. Him measuring it, and I'm like, okay, let's take a rain check, fucker. But you know, you hope, and you find out, because I think kids come here fully formed. This is, and it's our job to protect them, nurture them, but also find out what they really want to do and make it happen. Find out who they are, you know.
So you think it's nature, and you think it's about... Well, you have ADHD, and now you're saying you have autism, which I think
Asperger's.
Is,
yeah, it's a little
form of,
yeah.
I think Asperger's is the new ADHD. I think people are being recognized for it, and it's like you said, know what you're dealing with and work on that, because like ADHD, like we realize my daughter has it, is like give her things she's excited about and she'll do really well.
Yeah, but she'll hyper focus on them.
Right. She'll hyper focus and accomplish. But if you try to force them into something that they don't like, they're gonna fail and they're gonna feel bad about themselves.
Right. Well, and they'll excel at the things they do like. When they get focused, my son's the same way. When he gets focused on something, you know, he does very well.
Yeah.
We have my son, the school they go to, I love. And it's a public school over at Brentwood, and it's just great. And they've gone out of their way. You know, when he was in second grade, he had some issues with the teacher and whatever. And his mother's like, I want you to sue the school. I go, why would I sue the school? So you have enough money for private school. Like, she's very litigious,
right.
As you can tell by our 23 times in court. But I said, no. She goes, I'm going to get an advocate, a lawyer. For him, I go, we're his advocate. Slow down. So I am his advocate. We are not doing our job if there's a problem.
Right.
Because right after COVID, the teachers were stressed, the staff, you know, it was a weird time in the world. And so I said, I'm going to be down there every day or however, whatever it takes. The school district here, you know, people talk about the LA schools, slab them. They're great. They did an
My
IEP.
My kids went to public school in LA. It was great.
Yeah. They did an IEP, independent education program. First of all, when it first came up, it's special education. And when I first heard that, my son, I'm like, no, he's not going to be. But it's a whole different thing. And I, you know, he's done so well and grown. They take him out of the class, him and a couple guys, a couple hours a day, focus on something. He writes on it. He communicates on, you know, he's very good at Fortnite.
Yeah.
So he communicates like this. And I don't think kids are going to have to do a lot of handwriting.
They have bad handwriting. They don't know how to write.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They don't. And then when he gets a trophy for his handwriting, I try to do it for him, and mine is worse. Like, you could, and the teacher's like, I see where he gets it. But then they're like, that's not the most important thing. With this math thing, he's very, very good at, and technology and building things.
Yeah, right.
You know,
right.
He's got 3D printers, and he builds all this stuff and creates stuff. When the fire started in Palisades, their school's right next to Palisades, so I went up, got him. And I was supposed to leave town the next day to a show in San Francisco. I need the money.
Yeah.
Greg, I need the money.
And, hold on that for a second.
Yeah.
You just pulled up in a dirty Hyundai.
Yeah. Low on gas.
You're taking your kids to public school. You've already complained about how much your back doctor cost today.
Yeah, well,
I read online, Tom Arnold, I always look at my guest net worth. Your net worth is $30 million.
Yeah. My kids read that too. They're like, dude, what happened? Where's the Lambo? That's what my son always said. I go, I could have a Lambo, but 8 years ago I got you guys. And court is very expensive. I'm very happy with our life. We have a much smaller life.
So you live, because you grew up on a farm in Iowa, you kind of live a life. It would not be like you to be the private school Lambo guy.
Right.
But you could be that guy. You have the money to be that guy.
Well, I may have at one time. Lambos are not, you know, if you have kids, they don't work.
No,
you
got to
put kids in the back. And I don't like the way they are.
Right.
I had a Bentley Turbo for a while. That
you
was a great freaking car. It's a big car, you know, very fast, has all that stuff.
Did you get
stuff.
A lot of pussy in that car?
I've never got a lot of pussy anywhere. I think I was married when I had that car.
How many years have you been single? Because you seem like you've mostly been married in your life.
Yeah, 8 years. I haven't had a date in 8 years.
Wait, you're single now?
Yeah, been single for
you
8 years.
You haven't had a date in 8 years?
That's right.
Get out of here.
No.
What about that app?
No.
There's one that's for famous people.
No, Raya. My buddy started that.
Yeah. He did?
They're rich guys. And then there's women that want to be with rich guys. But to do an app, and my assistant put me on Bumble to be, let's see what
Bumble,
it's like. Because
right.
Sharon Stone's on it.
Yeah.
It's a friend of ours. Sharon Stone got kicked off Bumble because they didn't think it was Sharon Stone. And she actually went on dates with dudes, and it was bananas. Like, she's very brave that way.
Boy, talk about hitting the lotto.
No shit.
Wow.
No shit. Well, it's funny because one guy she had a date, she does this thing, and in case you ever have a date with her, and she looks out of their dinner, you have a secret, she says. And every man's like, oh, no. She knows. What is your secret? And the guy goes, well, I was in prison because I've stole first edition books all over the world.
Uh-huh.
Like, what do you call it? Biblios something?
Yeah.
There's a term for it. And she goes, but I'm much better. Everything's good now. She goes, I appreciate you sharing that with me.
Yeah.
At the end of the dinner, he said, I have a gift for you. And had her box. And it was a first edition book. And he's like, but I didn't steal this one. Like, it's so crazy. It's so crazy.
But what a great opener.
Yeah.
You have a secret.
And yeah, then, no, too bad.
Everybody
like,
has one.
Everybody gets, and everybody gets very nervous. Like,
what's
shit.
What's your secret?
She's reading my, oh, man.
Say we're on a first date. We're sitting at Rayo's. And
I like Rayo's.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I have to say this about dating. You know, I have this
life. Don't change the topic. I'm
full
asking life.
Okay.
You your secret.
Oh, God. I don't have as many secrets.
Well, you kind of let all your secrets out.
Yeah,
over the years.
Like I do before somebody else does.
Molested.
Yeah,
alcoholic.
Raped. Let's be honest. It was raped. Yeah, very about that. Alcoholic addict. You know all the. You
all
know,
the Roseanne stuff
yeah.
came out.
Yeah, I have four ex-wives.
Jesus.
You know, you can have three ex-wives and still kind of go, women, fuck, yeah. But if you have four, you go, holy shit, it's me. And it is me. That's why I haven't had a date
in a year. Is that the number?
I make
four?
Bad decisions. I think it is.
It takes four to learn that?
I think it does. I think it does. But I got my kids because that was my goal.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you know, there's a documentary series about my little sister called The Queen of Meth.
Oh, she sold meth back in Iowa.
She was the biggest drug dealer in America. Yeah.
And you're producing this, right?
Well, no, I appeared. I did a thing and worked with the producer.
Yeah.
But it's pretty damn good. It's a little three-episode thing.
It's out now?
Yeah. It's on Discovery.
Shit. Really?
Yeah. People like her. They
wow.
don't necessarily like me, but it goes into our childhood a lot. And people are like, was it embarrassing having your sister be a drug dealer? And I'm like, not when I was doing drugs, I wasn't embarrassing. I fucking had you. Like,
wait, but I thought that you had a falling out with your siblings over the years.
Oh, well, I have with some.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm the oldest of seven.
Yeah.
You know, stuff happens.
Right.
You know, that's what's good about having six siblings.
Have you reconciled?
Some of them.
Yeah.
No, you know, there's some that have just been chill. You know, they're always, you know, 100%.
How many black sheeps out of seven?
I'm the black sheep.
You're the black
sheep?
Even
though my sister went to prison twice for drug dealing. I absolutely am. And I tell you, my dad, single dad, when I was 10, he married the next door neighbor.
Now
he asked us, can I please marry her? And she was not a fan of mine.
Yeah.
You know, she was like, how do I get this guy out of here?
Uh-huh.
And it was, a year later, I was living with my grandparents. And I go in. My grandparents were very lucky to have two sets of grandparents. But we're sitting there at dinner, and all of a sudden my grandma buries her head in her hands and starts weeping. And my grandma's like, what's going on? Donnie, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? I had a black eye. I didn't even think about it. But she couldn't take it that I had a black eye for a fight at school. And I'm like, I can't live here because there's going to be a lot of weeping.
Yeah.
You know, so
black eyes.
So you figure out stuff. And, you know, what's great about my stepmother, I've tried to make the relationship work. And when you have kids, she's a grandmother. So I dealt with whatever our stuff was, you know, in my mind. And she's super nice to my kids. That's going to be what happens. Then she died, and they got my one brother's like, the will, not how I would have wrote it. But of all the stuff I gave her, the house,
what happened with the will?
She gave me like something and gave the other Well, that's
probably because you had so much money and they didn't.
But she gave the watches I gave my dad, who passed away right before, to my brother.
Right.
And I'm like, I should have one of those watches. They caused friction with my brother. Like, that's the deal. They're handed down. When I die, I'll give them to your kids. I'm like, what are you talking about when you die? Right now, I bought them for dad.
Yeah.
I want to have one. I have a son named after dad.
Uh-huh.
And that's become a real thing. But it's what's great about it is I was right about her.
You know what time it is?
Yeah.
Time to give my son that fucking watch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Write that down.
Yeah. Well, I also, it validates everything I thought about my childhood. Like, there's no gray area now. It actually makes it better.
Yeah.
Because it's, okay, that's who she was. Like, she specifically.
Here's what I love about you, and there's many things I love about you, is that you've been on a journey. For as long as I know, you've always tried to sort of unravel who you are, what makes you tick, what makes you make the decisions you've made. And it's I feel like there's no less of a drive for that now at this age than there ever was. What do you think caused you to want to self-actualize so much over this time?
Well, I think that, I obviously wanted to be better. It's a great way to connect with people.
Yeah.
If you do that, if you're honest about yourself, you're able to be of service to people and people will share their stuff with you, which is a huge honor. I don't know. I always had a thing like there's stuff that happened to me that I'm going to be the one who talks about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. If there's jokes to be made at my expense, I'm going to do the fucking jokes.
Right.
But I'm going to be ahead of each one of these things. You know,
I remember when they roasted you, it was like, well, you can't really roast Tom Arnold because he's already roasting himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I thought I'm going to be ahead of this. And I also have thick skin, and a sense of humor. And when people do roast you or do jokes about you on TV or like there's a Simpsons episode that my kids love. It's about these celebrities and they are shot to the sun. And it's me, and like whatever. And people are like, were you mad about that? I go, no, that's my voice. Like, that was one of the biggest honors. I go, everybody did it. No, I was the only one.
That's
the other
awesome.
People, they made. But it's great. And it's an honor, you know?
But do you think, I don't want to break your anonymity, but like, you know, you're in the program.
I am in the program.
And is that something that has kept you sort of like continuing to unearth things? And
yeah. Well, for the last 36 years. I think there was a meeting that I started in my house in 1990 that's still going on.
Wow.
And
they haven't left?
Yeah, they haven't left. Well, we moved at one point because I was doing construction to a high rise in Santa Monica. It's this beautiful high rise that divorced people live in.
Uh-huh.
And I think I was going through a divorce, and it was co-ed at the time. And there's some famous dudes in my meeting, and all these young women were like, coming because they want to get sober. And the guy's like, you need to make it a stag meeting. I go, so you want me to tell the women they can't come? I can't do that.
Yeah.
Because it's always been that.
Right.
Well, they said, we'll move to this other guy's house.
Yeah.
And we'll start over. So, but the best thing, I've never not hung around 12-step people.
Right.
The group, I find that to be, that saved my life. Even when I've been out of the program, I still went to meetings when I was on the pain pills because I thought I was sober, and I'm grateful I never got away from that because when
How
I realized
long were you on the pain pills for years, right?
Yeah, I was 19 years sober. I wrecked my motorcycle on PCH, broke my back, and I'm laying there. And I'd always told the young guys I sponsored who are heroin and opioid guys, that's not my thing. I don't get that. Mm. I'm alcohol, cocaine. That's all. So the ambulance comes, the guy gets out, says, "Are you in pain?" I go, "Yes." And he said, "Not anymore." It gave me a shot of fentanyl. And my brain went, oh, shit, that's what I've needed my whole life. Forget that other stuff. So a year later, I'm about to take a 20-year cake you call for your birthday. And I'm sitting there. I'm like, I am not sober. I'm on the pain medication from a year ago.
Right.
I'm going to need to buy this delicious cake, but then I have to start over.
Yeah.
And it's so fucking
So it was
humbly
just 1 year, really.
What's that?
It was just really 1 year that you were on the
One
pills.
Hard year.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I remember you struggled with that. Yeah.
Yeah. But also,
did you make a fool of yourself at all? Like, did TMZ or anything, like, say, Tom's on drugs?
Well, no, but the first time, in 89, it was a big deal with cocaine and booze, but I never did drugs in front of anybody.
Yeah.
You know, from the 80s. I moved out to Los Angeles January of 88 to write the Roseanne Show. And Roseanne and I had been friends for many years. I met her when I was 23, just out of the meatpacking plant in Iowa. And she was like a feminist, and she's old, a little older, 7 years, and she was a very funny comedian.
Yeah.
She wasn't famous yet, but the guy that booked the Comedy Gallery in Minneapolis said, I saw a woman in Denver. You guys are going to do next weekend together. You're going to hit it off. And he's right.
Yeah.
We did hit it off. We had fun, and you know, I started writing jokes, which was for her, to see a joke you wrote for someone on Johnny Carson. We're sitting back there.
Do you remember the joke?
I'm sure it was a fat joke. But at one point after we got married, she's like, ease up on the fat jokes.
Can you write some jokes for me? And you give her 2 pages of fat jokes. Yeah. Hey, thanks a lot.
Yeah, but once we became a couple, she's like, can you ease up on that? I go, they're the funniest stuff, though. But it was good. So she come back every 3 months. And we tour together and party very hard. And then she'd go back. And I came out to play her husband on our HBO special the year before, the Roseanne show and stuff like that. So when I moved out there officially, because I had a good job writing the show, she came in my office one day and goes, do you do this every day? I go, yeah, booze and drugs? Yeah. She goes, that's bad. I go, is it? She goes, I thought you only did it when we got together every 3 months. I go, no. It's an everyday thing, possible.
During the day?
Yeah, during the, you know, whatever. Just all, I didn't drink until night, but the first guy I met out here was a big type drug dealer. You could buy quantity cheaper.
Yeah.
Like literally the first day at a bar on Ventura over there. And I'm like, this is so much cheaper and better and smarter.
It's like Costco, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So she said, yeah, that's not good. So in that moment, I went, I'll never do drugs in front of anybody or drink in front of anybody. Again, I didn't even think about, I'll quit. Like, that didn't occur to me until a year later when I got very big trouble. And cocaine, alcohol, it was all over the back of the tabloids were very big. I lost my job at the Roseanne show. Roseanne ended our engagement. And I was like, guys, I got this. I'm going to take myself into rehab. Because I'm going to get on top of this. And the only reason I went to rehab was because I wanted to get in there. And then people say, he's good.
Yeah.
Never. It wasn't about quitting drugs. It was about getting people to like me again and going, this is what I'm
going to do. In a healthy way or an unhealthy way?
Well, it had always been an unhealthy way before. Just to show them, oh, Tom Arnold, good guy now
like
again.
Like me,
but
yeah.
On the eighth day in that rehab, my therapist said, have you ever considered getting sober for yourself? And I'm like, no. How would I even do that?
He
said, you have to love yourself. I go, how would I do? That's crazy. But I did a trick. I always tell the new guys, I had a picture of myself when I was 4. And if you see the documentary, there's a lot of shit going on to me when I was 4. And I thought, I love this kid, man.
Yeah.
And he's me. Right. And he doesn't deserve to die and be in prison. So I really stayed on that feeling for the next couple weeks in there.
Wow, that's powerful.
And then I called Roseanne. I go, hey, I love you. I appreciate you. I understand completely why we're not getting married. I understand why I'm not going to be writing the show anymore. But I'm going to stay in here for myself. And she went, oh, we're getting married. And I remember my brain went, shit, if I didn't know it could have manipulated her that easy by just saying those words,
right.
I would have said it instead of, you know, really thinking about it.
Uh-huh. And so, but that's stuck. That was your point? And you haven't drank since?
That comes up. Haven't had a drink
Unbelievable.
Since.
Unbelievable.
Not a drink
How
since.
How many years is that?
89. What is it? That's 36 years.
All right.
December 10th, 89.
I quit in 91.
That's really good.
Yeah. Yeah. I drank one night.
Yeah.
One night, Kevin Meaney's funeral. You must have known Kevin Meaney.
Yes,
right?
Of course.
I mean, one of my
funny
dearest
fucking
friends.
Dude, man.
Truly one of the funniest guys
truly.
Ever hit the stage.
Like funnier than.
Funnier
I don't know who was funnier because
I mean,
his act.
I literally
big pants, fam. Big
yesterday,
pants
I rewatched the "We Are the World" on Johnny Carson.
Yeah.
I was sitting in my backyard with my laptop, and I just do that when I want to cheer up because it never gets tired to see somebody express joy.
Yeah.
Through stand-up.
Yeah.
It was just was for him, and it was in his voice. It was the way
his
he
voice.
Wanted to do it.
Yeah.
You know,
the way he presented himself. Comics loved him.
Yeah, so when he died, I gave the eulogy at his funeral, and then I went, and then everybody was drinking. Yeah, it was Barry Crimmins, and like
these
comics are
fucking
hanging out.
Barry Crimmins, yeah.
So they're all drinking hard. My family was very close to him. Like my mother was like really close to him, and there was so much drinking going around. I went back and I was staying at my sister's because it was in New York, and she put me in her. She has like a bonus room that's got a bar in it.
Oh, yeah.
And I went over and I found a bottle of Chivas Regal and I drank myself to sleep. And that's the only time I've drank in 35 years.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good story, though.
Yeah.
You know, that's a good story. And you're okay.
And you never slipped once.
Not on booze. Wow. No, but I had the pain pills. Yeah. And then 8.5 years ago or so, things are not good at home. And the funny thing about the being raped as a kid, in my case, I thought when I got sober, I'm like, oh shit, that's a real thing. I gotta find the guy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so I worked with my therapist on what to say when I found him and not to kill him and go have hurt me more. I worked on the whole spiel. And I had four younger brothers. They were looking for him. They're pretty good at this. And they call it one day and say, he's in Des Moines. He's a big religious leader, which I do, and a huge, successful businessman.
Uh-huh.
Here's his address. And he's about to adopt his fourth son.
No.
I swear to God. So I'm like, it's go time. So I get in there, fly in there. I go to his place of business, the receptionist. Like, oh, my God, it's Tom Arnold. I said, I'm here to see Terry. I'll call him. No, don't. Point me to his office. You know, I start walking to his office. He gets out. She told him, starts coming down the hall towards me. I haven't seen him since I was a kid. He's a big dude, and he comes right up on me. I start my spiel. I'm here to give you back the pain and shame you caused me as a kid, and if you tried to do that to me now, you know, he came right up and stuck his finger in my chest and goes, your memories are wrong, which is a weird thing to say unless you've been confronted before. Right. And for a second, well, I was 4 years old, and I was in the room they used to lock me in, and I could smell the laundry in his backyard. Uh-huh. I swear to God. And then I went, I'm not 4 years old. I'm a full-grown man. I'd take his hand, bend it back, and if you tried to do that to me now, I'd break your fucking neck. And eyeball to eyeball with this guy. And then I'm like, start to walk out. Everybody that works for him heard it. Because in Iowa, Tom Arnold's here.
Right,
Jesus.
Right.
And so I come out of there, a ton of bricks off my shoulder. I can't believe it. I call Roseanne. I call my brother. And a ton of bricks. Now, I tried to use law enforcement on my case. But statute of limitations at the time had run out. You know, back home in Ottumwa, Iowa.
Isn't that insane?
It is.
The statute of limitations on child molestation.
Yeah, they
when
changed.
The victim is too young to have the presence to do anything about it.
Yeah, when it was happening to me, I remember my dad was giving me a bath. And he's like, Tommy, what happened to your butt? And I go, oh, Dad, I was in the woods, which I had this woods by his house, and I slid down a branch. Yeah. And it hurt me.
Oh, my God.
And so he was, you know.
Didn't you go after him with a baseball bat when you were a kid? Didn't he live, like, across the street?
No, I tried to shoot him. No, he lived literally across the street up high.
I tried to shoot him.
And when my dad would pull up, you know, I'd be over there, of course. He'd have his rifle. And you know how easy it'd be for me to kill him.
Yeah.
And, you know, my dad was my only parent. Like, you know, and he was like, it was, I believed that. So, you know, finding him was really, really important. And so I walked from there, his business. I drove right over to the state capitol in Iowa and came busted in the governor's office. And Terry Branstad was governor at the time. He's a Republican, but he's still nice. And I came by. I go, listen, this guy, again, Terry Williams, he's about to adopt his fourth son. You need to stop that adoption. This is what's going on. He's like, whoa, Tom. You're asking me to commit a federal offense. You asking me is a federal offense. You are not here.
Right.
And I like get out of there and I'm sad. And then 3 days later, my brother calls and goes, the adoption fell through. There was some kind of paperwork. I know. Then I thought, have I done everything? So then I had my brothers go up for 6 weeks, putting up posters of his face, his name, his crimes, his address, all around, because I wanted to warn the other kids in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And they tear them down. My brothers go back, put them all up.
Yeah, yeah.
For 6 weeks. And so then I thought, well, and then at my sister's first drug trial.
And he never tried to sue you for slander.
No.
Which means he's guilty.
Yeah, exactly. Right. In fact, on Oprah, I said, I'm not going to say his name, but I'm going to call him Terry Williams. because it was true. And then a woman came up at my sister's drug trial and said, I know it's true about Terry Williams because he did it to my husband, who's his brother.
Wait, who said that?
A woman that was married to Terry Williams' brother, to Dennis. And she came up and said it happened.
No
30
kidding.
Boys came forward after that. Yeah, it's such a huge success. I've dumped myself because my whole thing was I don't want to be at Walmart back in my hometown and have a guy walking behind me. It's like, see the famous guy? I fucked him.
Right.
You know, I'm like, I'm going to get on top of this thing.
Right.
So that, in my mind, that was it.
Yeah.
But when my son was born, you know, as he got closer to four, I'm looking at him, because I think you always think if you something like that happens to you, you think maybe I was a bad kid, maybe I was ugly, maybe there's something wrong with me. I mean, it's hard to, it's not true, but it's hard. And then when I saw my son get to be the same age, I'm like, oh shit, no, I was that. I was perfect like him.
Did you ever find yourself being paranoid or overprotective about your son's safety?
I don't, you know, I keep a tight eye on, you know, we have a lot of sleepovers at my house. My son is very big kid. But, you know, we talk, there's an awareness about drugs, alcohol, that. And I think society is.
Well, it's great now because now, you know, it started in preschool. They talked about your bathing suit areas. They would tell the kids, which, you know, we didn't have that as kids. Nobody told us that something could happen to us and we had the right to say no.
Right.
And now little kids are taught that there's boundaries and that they can tell their parents, they can tell their teacher.
Don't touch my body.
Right.
You know, they do. And I think that's a good, you know, the truth is in the world, man, there's only so much, unless you keep locked up in the house.
Right.
But,
all right, well, let's change topics.
All right. But they know if they could, they call me if, you know.
All right, so tell me about this autism that you have now.
Well, it's Asperger's. Okay.
Well, is it? What's the difference?
Well, it's
is Asperger's, you know, it's a type of autism?
I guess some people consider it. Asperger's is similar. Asperger's, the name Asperger's is named after a Nazi, the doctor that discovered it at one of these places where they have all these kids who are doing experiments. I swear to God.
Yeah.
And he's like, we discovered this syndrome.
Yeah, because the Nazis did get hyper-focused, didn't they?
They really did.
Yeah.
They were meticulous, those guys.
So is it hard to
focus
on something? Is it hard to be Jewish and be
well,
a condition that's a Nazi condition?
It's fun to know the whole story.
Yeah.
You know, and so, but it's a, you know, you're on a spectrum.
Yeah.
You are able to hyper-focus on things, but you have to, I do a lot of work because I have kids. I don't come to the house and they'll say, Daddy, will you shoot baskets with me? I don't say 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Because I learned there's no 5 minutes.
Right.
Yeah, they put me on a, and the first time when my daughter was two, I'd come home from hosting a show for Music Cares, a big concert over there at the Henry Fonda Theater with Billy Idol, a whole bunch of people I loved. You know, they have such great, they're such a great organization. I was feeling good about myself. Came home, sent the babysitter home. It's late at night. I go in my office, get on a computer to start looking at sports or looking at whatever. And I always would drift off. It'd be 5 hours.
Yeah.
Like that.
Right.
And I'm doing it. And all of a sudden I feel there's somebody standing next to me. And it's my daughter, who's not even two. And I'm like, oh my God, how did you get down here, honey? Because her bed is at the top of stairs and I got a gate. Like you, it's complicated to get down there.
Yeah.
And I said, you got to go to bed, honey. Oh, please. Oh, please go back to bed. I'll be up there in 5 minutes. And then I went back to this. And then I realized she's still there. And I look at her and I realized she knows every lie I've ever told.
Yeah.
Like she knew I was lying just then. Right. I didn't know I was lying.
Right.
So I went up with her then. And I don't do the 5 minute thing. I say, I need 12 minutes to make a call. They put me on a timer. When they come up, I go, what are you doing your homework? Oh, 20 minutes. Okay, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, so it's easy to, there are tools that you do so you're able to focus, you're able to make eye contact, you know, because you have to have this intimate relationship with your kids.
Right.
And you can be easily distracted by other stuff, but you also can hyper-focus on stuff. And
well, part of it, too, is now your kids are getting to the age where they can start to understand this condition so that they can sort of like adjust their expectations of what you can and can't do and not take it personally.
Right.
Is that a discussion you have with them also?
I do. But I need to be accountable, you know, and that but also with the stuff, with the court stuff all the time with their mom or the police stuff, you know, she swatted us. She's, you know.
Really?
Oh, yes. She has a pattern. She called and said, I want to take the kids to their first day of school. I go, well, it's my, I'm going to take them, but all the parents are welcome. That night, kids are asleep. She calls the cops. His name's Tom Arnold. He's very violent. He has a lot of guns. I'm worried about my kids. And the cops come in hot.
Yeah.
You know, and I meet him outside. I go, slow down. Number one, call your supervisor because you've been here a lot. Their supervisor actually gave me a card. And she goes, even if you think she's going to call the cops, call us.
Yeah.
Because we can't come out anymore. So I said, I'm not waking the kids up, guys. They're fine. It's a school night. And I don't have any guns.
I thought you were a gun guy.
Well, that's what I told them.
Yeah.
And then I had to wake up the kids and say, we got to hide the fucking guns. For real, like, what good does that do if you got your fucking squirrel rifle in the garage and under a bunch of shit? If someone comes to the house with a gun, you're what do you do? Hey, excuse me, give me a minute. Let's make this a fair fight. I'm going to go out to the garage. And, so
what's the combination again?
Yeah. Shit. So, yeah, I mean, but that kind of stress, and each time we just finished a trial Friday, it went very well for me. And people are like, you always win. I go, yeah, but do I? Because I always have to pay for the lawyer.
It's stressful.
Yeah. It's stressful. So, but
and
I don't want
the kids. They must feel the energy of it happening too. You know,
they've
got to pick up on it.
Yeah, and I do my best to, like, the school knows too. Oh, is this a day? Mm-hmm. Is the mom? And they give a little bit of grace if they go to school. A lot of times they won't go.
Yeah.
Till I get back, they want to see me come back from court. But I do my best to, keep that separate. Again, they've seen all this. They've seen the cops. They've keep the cops with the mom and stuff and taking her out. And the only thing I do, because they love their mom, they love their dad. It's in their DNA, as they should. But the only thing I do is go, okay, after it's over, what just happened wasn't okay. I don't treat people like that. I don't want you to treat people like that. And then we move on.
Yeah.
Because you do feel, I know from my crazy mother, you feel some shame, like what the, you know, but you have to acknowledge it.
Right.
Because my dad never acknowledged it in front of, like, I knew her mom was crazy. When I was four, she moved out. She said, I'm not maternal. I'll never tell you I love you. I'll tap you on the knee once in a while. But the first drugs and booze my sister and I ever did, we got from our mom, of course.
Right.
So, but my dad would never, she'd come over drunk, fall into the Christmas tree, and my dad would just laugh. Uh-huh. I knew better, but my sister looked at her like, that's my idol. That's why, she's the coolest.
Yeah.
And so my sister moved in with her when she was 14. And as the documentary shows, it went downhill fast.
Yeah, right.
So
right.
Very lucky, very lucky.
All right, I also want to ask you about, you did an ad a long time ago. You've done a bunch of ads.
It's good to see you, Greg.
It's good to see you, man. Yeah.
This is like a adult social thing.
Right.
Me and you, old friends, getting together.
Right.
You know, it's not a play date.
No.
And by the way, my next, when I do have a date, it's going to have to be start with a play date. Our kids are playing together.
Uh-huh.
And in my mind, my dream is a woman goes to me and goes, you want to go in the closet and fuck? Yes, I do. Oh, God. Let's go there for 5 minutes.
7 minutes in heaven.
Yes.
Remember that when you were a teenager?
Oh, yeah.
7 minutes in heaven?
Yeah.
And sometimes you'd go in there with a girl and you just sit because she didn't want anything to do with you. So you'd have to just sit for 7 minutes.
Right.
But you come out and pull up your fly anyway. And
you tell stories, yeah.
But you did an ad for many years ago for the Craftmatic adjustable bed.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that?
I have them. I
want to talk about the Craftmatic adjustable bed because my friends just got one.
Oh.
And I come over and they're like, all right, look at it. It's got two halves. And so you've each got a remote control. So you each get to decide what angle the head is at, what angle the feet is at. You can set the temperature for your side of the bed. And I just
vibrating. Good vibrating things at different areas. You can
turn
on
different for each side. Yeah. I just thought, why not just get a divorce?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. First of all, I just have to say, you have an amazing wife. Do you still have her?
Yeah, I do.
Everything I know
years.
About her is so good. So when I look at you, I'm like, yeah, he's got that going. That's a solid thing. So whatever decisions or worries, concerns you have about your kids, that you got this partner, I don't think you'd be too soft on the kids. I want to say that.
Yeah.
You know, if that's what you're worried about, it's like, I think I'm loving my kids too much, and they're going to be soft. That's not. Whatever you're doing is
I think
right
in the long run, it's building self-esteem, which is probably the most important thing
absolutely.
A person can have. Right.
Absolutely. So, and plus, people don't have careers like we. Oh, you have to go to college. You have to do this.
Right.
No, that now, when they'll go to 5 colleges or none.
And also, they're going into a world where college educations don't mean shit anymore because AI is replacing most of the jobs.
Yes.
And how many people do you know that actually followed the career that they majored in college? Like 1 out of 7 follow up on that. A lot of kids went to art school and they go into accounting. Like it's whatever. So
or they follow it for a bit. Even they get their legal degree,
right?
Their lawyer for 5 years, like, I can't take it.
That's right.
Want to be an agent or something.
Yeah. So I'd much rather see my kids. Like, my daughter worked here at the podcast studio for a while.
That's
she was
very
helping
cool.
out. She learned some skills. Yep. She teaches little kids how to swim now.
That's
she,
very that's very
yeah,
important.
Yeah. She used to teach preschool. So, you know.
She's a saint, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
My daughter was just, I directed my first movie.
Did you really?
She's like, I think I should be in a movie, Dad. I go, okay. Why don't you and Millie, you could be extras, you'd be the flower girls.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, okay. And then she came up the next day. I don't think Millie should. I should do my first movie by myself.
Really?
Yeah. And she read the script, and she really loved it.
Did she have notes on it?
Yeah, she did give me a couple good ideas. She goes, at the end of this movie, you should have like a short film or something that they put in the middle, like all the Avengers stuff. Like, you think the movie's over, they start the credits. We
she
did that in True Lies,
too,
with me. She goes, I think that would make it better.
Yeah.
You know. But then she said, I want to go to work with you again tomorrow. And I said, honey, first of all, I'm directing, so I got to be at the monitors.
Yeah.
I said, and she was fine. She hung out and, with makeup and hair. And all of a sudden, I see a golf cart coming. It's her driving back up to the set to find me.
No, not driving herself.
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I love
She figured out how to do that. And so we were filming at the Motion Picture Television Home up there in Calabasas. It's a beautiful campus where we hope to be
it's one
day.
It's where you retire as an actor.
Yeah, a lot of great actors. But she's like, I want to come tomorrow. I go, honey, there's no extras tomorrow. She goes, well, I'll put a hoodie on and I'll walk in the back. Like, she's anyway, I get out there and I decide, well, we're shooting a scene in a theater. She could be, her and her friend could be in the background.
Yeah.
And we did that. And then I had to get, they start freaking out. There has to be a teacher on set.
Yeah.
Like, first I had to get her a permit.
Right.
There has to be a teacher if she's there.
Right.
It's because they have to do 4 hours of school. So I had to scramble and get a teacher out there, but I'm glad I did.
Damn. So when you shot.
Anyway, your daughter's great.
She's great. I love her.
Did she babysit or child care at all?
She babysits.
Yeah. Really?
Why? You need a babysitter?
You always need somebody, because the babysitter we have now is getting her master's in social work. She's gonna, move on.
Yeah.
You had babysitters.
Yeah, hit me up. She can always cover a shift. I mean, you're not close to us, so it probably wouldn't be a regular thing. But if you're ever in a pinch, she'll come. But tell me about this. Did you shoot when you shot at the actor's retirement home? What's it called?
The Motion Picture and Television. Well, it's the Motion Picture and Television Fund. They have the night before the Oscars party, the night before the Emmys party. It's the biggest charity. It was started by Samuel Goldwyn. His stuff's every place of this for a place to. For actors,
so it's got apartments that they can live in. There.
Yeah, it's got a huge medical facility, gym.
What are we doing? Why are we not writing a script about that place?
I know it
a
is
bunch
so
of retired actors nice. Living
and,
together.
And like, there's a cinematographer, 95 years old. They'll come up to me, and go, "How are you shooting this?" I go, "I just ask 4 or 5." He goes, "It needs to be a 6. You got to whatever that means about the lens."
Yeah.
But to talk to these people, we had some in the movie.
Uh-huh.
And, some of them have memory issues.
Yeah.
But when they get started on something, but I love them. I love it all.
I play golf, which I'm sure you don't do because you're a little too hyper for that.
Mm-hmm.
But I went out to this course in the Valley, in Simi Valley. Mm-hmm. And if you show up, there was two of us that showed up. So what they do is they pair you with two other strangers so you have a foursome. Mm-hmm. So I show up and they're calling our tee time. We're supposed to be on the tee. And there's a guy on the microphone going like, 10 o'clock, tee time, Fitzsimmons, get on the tee, you're late. So we go up to the late. Me and my friend are a couple minutes late. Mm-hmm. And there's this old, tough guy with the fucking knuckles that look like he's hit a lot of guys in his life.
Yeah.
And he's got this leathery skin. And he goes, why don't you get to the tee on time next time? And we're like, hey, we're really sorry. And he was kind of gruff with us for a couple holes. And then he started to lighten up because we made some jokes and we started to bond. And it turns out this guy's name was Buddy Van Horn. He was Clint Eastwood's stuntman for 40 years. He did all of his stunts for 40 years. And this guy started regaling us with these great stories about Clint Eastwood. And I just picture, what about a place where you got a dozen of those guys on a TV show telling stories?
They do have a TV show on the that they broadcast within the – they have a great facility.
They film it themselves?
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
This woman that helped us, I'll give you her information. She's in charge. And they film it themselves. It goes to the community, I think also to public access.
Oh, wow.
But they have an improv class at 3:30 in the afternoon.
Great.
The Sparkle Ads. Oh, they have a meetings. You know,
God.
But it is, there is something
they got
great
a health,
there.
Health facility, like
oh,
gym.
Unbelievable.
Yeah,
Chaim Sabat donated this facility. Like they have hospice, end of life care. They have great the gym and the stuff. Those facilities are amazing.
Wow.
The health, they're on it. With
so, how do you qualify to get in there?
That's a good question. You have to have worked in our business,
right?
You have, you know, you
probably
just
some kind of financial hardship or something.
Yeah, yeah. A need. You don't have a place to to live. But I think you're very smart about that. Well, okay, we'll do a show about that.
Let's do it, man.
But, you know, you said golf. I haven't played it in 20 years.
Yeah.
Because 20 years ago, I won the Michael Douglas golf tournament in Vegas.
Did you really?
He came on my sports show and asked me live on the air if I would play. I'm a terrible golfer.
Yeah.
And I said, okay. Now, he asked me because I'm a terrible golfer. And he put me on Kenny G's team. Kenny G, Joe Pesci, Heather Locklear, me. And he changed the rules because Kenny G won so many times that you had to take one drive from each, you know, it used to be best ball
where one
guy's doing it.
Yeah, yeah, one guy.
And so I'm playing and I get to the 17th. I make it kind of a Happy Gilmore drive. It works out. And we won.
Yeah.
And I got the trophy. And I said, that's it. I'm never playing again.
Yeah.
And when we were out at the motion picture home, they have a putting green that we're filming on. They go, look at that wall over there. All the people that have won, those are, you should go look, Tom. I bet you know some of them. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'll do that later. But at the end, I walked over and it says, Tom Arnold, Michael Douglas thing. I'm like, that's it.
That's awesome.
That's my time.
I played golf with Pesci one time at Lakeside. And so they tell me you're going to play with John. It was one of these celebrity tournaments.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they a lot of the celebrities canceled, so they called me. And so they go, you're going to play with Joe Pesci. And so I'm on the first tee, and I'm nervous, and playing with a couple friends and him. And then he doesn't show up. And so, like, I get to the third hole, and I've got a chip from right off the green. Mm. And I look up in the corner of my eye, and there's Joe Pesci standing. He's waiting to join us. He got here late.
Yeah.
So I get so nervous that I just scull the putt, like, right over the green. It's a sand trap. And he just walks past me, and he goes, the fuck kind of shot was that?
No, he's on it. Like, he was on me like, what the fuck is, you know. And the best thing about that tournament, Sly, on the other team, made a 40-foot putt. Yeah, Sylvester Stallone made like a 40-foot putt, and they thought they won it.
Yeah.
Because we were off the green, and it was Heather Locklear's shot. And this is on TV, so you know it's real. She chipped in this fucking crazy shot, and we won it because of her.
Wow.
Like, it was crazy. Just Sly's like, we got this.
And, that's amazing.
You know, and so.
What about the poker? You ever playing the celebrity poker stuff?
I do sometimes.
Yeah.
I don't like poker.
No.
I don't like to do it. Arnold has a thing for after school all-stars, a thing we do for after school programs. Raised $1.6 billion over the years.
Wow.
They said, you don't want to raise money. If you open up your house, Arnold, and had a poker thing, $50,000 a person, you have an auction. And, you know, we made $7 million last time. But I go in because I have to play because I'm part of the – and I lose as fast as I can.
Yeah.
Because the first loser gets a prize. Whoever loses
first.
Worst
player, right.
Yeah.
Right.
But I don't – you know, Normie Walters used to have these games where eight guys, one woman, seven guys, and it'd be like the dad from Wonder Years and Hal Linden and George Siegel and Elliot Gould. Like, you'd look around like, I know everybody here. And it was not big money, but they took it pretty seriously.
You know what woman is really good celebrity is Mimi Rogers. She's,
she played a lot.
Yeah, she's really
she
good.
She was very good and sexy.
Yeah.
There's always something about her because, you know, we talk when you're not playing and have, you know, chit-chat. I was like, she's got it going on.
You got a thing for older women right
now.
Huh?
Well, it's not older compared to me.
Jane Fonda.
Yeah.
You have Jane Fonda's in her 90s.
Yeah.
If you had a shot, would you take it?
Yeah. I might, but... You know, I want to keep our friendship going, and she's very. I'm afraid if I laid
on her.
That's
when you know you're not good in bed.
She's brittle.
When you're like, I couldn't have sex with her. Yeah. It would ruin our
relationship. No, she wanted to. I'd beat her. Yeah, yeah.
She wanted to.
Yeah, if she said, "Hey, let's do it." I go, "I got it." That'd be exciting. Be an honor.
Oh, if she said.
Yeah, if she wanted. You know, there are certain women, but people do tell me you should date someone your own age, Tom. And I always say, "Have you seen people my age?" But there are. I'm going to say there are a lot of. It's surprising. A lot of funny, smart, sexy, 60-something women.
Let me tell you something. A vagina feels amazing.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter the age of the vagina. You're not
checking
the age. It's not like a wine.
No.
It's a soft, slippery experience for your penis.
Well, I'll tell you what women my age are not looking for. A guy that used to have a lot of money and now has two little kids. Because they're like, yeah, that doesn't work in my
luck.
Thing. But I agree with that about the vaginas. Some are dry. You got to bring your own lube.
Yeah,
you Astroglide. You right. lube them up before. I've done that with people.
You don't want to over lube, though, because then you don't feel anything.
Yeah.
You get just the crown.
Do you lube when you jerk off?
A little bit.
A little bit. Is it Astroglide or the other?
No, I use Burt's Bees
hand
lotion. Yeah.
Does your wife make you do that because it's healthy?
What
if you're
going to
jerk off, Burt's Bees is a super healthy.
She's supervising my jerking off?
Probably. You don't even know it. She's probably grateful. You know, it's like, I'm glad you're doing that.
Have you
that.
Ever jerked off in bed with a woman who's sleeping?
I'm sure I have. I'm sure I've done that
many
times. Now, when you live with two kids, by the way, we talked about the Craftmatic beds.
Yeah.
I have that setup, the two beds side by side, different remote controls. And my thing was, the kids come into my bed a lot.
Yeah.
They'll have their own bed. And I'll have this side.
Oh, I like that.
But that's not how it works.
Right.
You know, I'm always trying to squeeze in the middle.
Yeah.
But those beds are really good. I recommend them highly.
Yeah. I got this mattress recently, and it's memory foam.
Yeah, that's good, right?
But I think it was a mistake because the other day my wife hit on me, and I wasn't in the mood.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm just not in the mood. And then the mattress said out loud, I remember him jerking off 2 hours ago.
Yeah.
And I said, I need some forgetful foam.
Yeah. Hey, if it were a true story, how would your wife hit on you? What does she do to make
My wife, I got to be honest, does not hit on me very much. It's almost always
That's
me.
Normal. Yeah. And how do you hit on her?
I'll dry hump her while she's doing the dishes. And
oh, I like
go
that.
Go lay in the bed naked under the covers.
I like that.
And tell her I have to show her something.
Yeah, and you keep your you know, not hard, but like half a boner.
Half a
show
boner.
Penis.
You want to show interest.
Yeah, you got to fluff yourself.
Yeah, you got to give it a little self fluff.
Yeah.
And then there's usually like a. Here's what's crazy is like, the move I make a lot of times is. Because when you're married too long, too long. That didn't sound good. When you're married for
over
a long time,
over 4 years, yeah.
Then the sex starts to be something that it's harder to make a spontaneous move,
right?
Because it just involves taking all your clothes off is almost too much of a hurdle,
right?
So I try to catch her when she's coming out of the shower.
Oh, that's good.
You know, like I'll be in the room and I'll be folding a shirt. I'll just keep refolding.
Does
and
she
refolding
ever say,
it.
"Don't"? I'm clean.
That's what she says.
Yeah.
And it's like you can only fuck me when I'm filthy.
Yeah, but you would fuck her when she's filthy before she takes a shower.
Prefer
like
it.
You don't care.
Yeah, no,
yeah,
I like a little musk.
Yeah,
yeah. Meanwhile, when we were dating and I hit on her, she'd be like, "Oh, let me jump in the shower and freshen up."
Mm-hmm.
Now it's like, no, now when I smell like that French tennis player. Did you read about that?
No.
In the French Open, there's this woman, and she's actually in the semifinals right now. She just won this morning against an American woman, and. Her last match, her opponent went up to the line judge and said, "Can you make her put on deodorant because she smells so bad?"
Oh, my God. She's European, right?
She's French.
French, yeah. They smell bad. Do you ever travel over there in a plane, bunch of them?
Oh, how about LL? How about the Israelis?
That's very true. Awful.
Jesus.
Awful. Yeah, so they
Isn't
said.
Is it funny that now I'm going to be called anti-Semitic? Meanwhile, it's okay to say
Jew.
It about the French.
I'm Jewish. It's Europeans in general. And the farther east Europe you get, the stinkier they are.
That was always the thing about New York City cab drivers. It was brutal. And then you get the Pakistani guys in there. Oh.
But they use a cologne now that's, you know, I see a lot of Uber drivers. There's a cologne that they all use. Like, the whole car smells like it.
It used to be a Crown. Remember that in the
old
days?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There was like a Crown on the taxi dashboard.
So she really said that about a woman?
Yes.
That's disgusting that she did that.
And then, but
they're
it came
outdoors,
out.
Right?
She got shamed. Yeah, it's outdoors!
Yeah.
And but she got shamed about it, and she ended up apologizing.
Yeah. Yeah, and by the way, you know, first time I worked out with Arnold Schwarzenegger, I was like, he stinks. But they do. All the guys do it because they work out. They like that.
Yeah.
You know, this is what it's like when you're doing a hard thing.
Right.
But I think that's wild.
Do you smell? What's your body odor like?
I try not to.
But I mean, when it comes out, do you have a lot of smell to you?
I have some. And I know this from having kids. It's different boys, girls. Like my son came in. Again, he's huge. Came into my bathroom one day for playing basketball. I go, "God damn it.
Yeah.
Raise your arms. Raise your that's the." And I spray his arms. Every day you got to do that for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
That's disgusting. All now, my daughter, who's 9, she's the tallest kid in her class. We were doing something, and I was like, maybe she has a little, and I didn't want to say anything. I'd never say anything to her. So here's what I did. I said, hey, you want to go to the mall? We go down there to Fashion Square. They got the robot sushi. We have it. She loves it. He's like, hey, you want to walk around the mall? And walk around a little bit. And I go, what's that? Is that Sephora? Right? You love that store. She goes, yeah. And I go right to the back. I'm looking at stuff with her. She gets the stuff. And I go, oh, what is this? All right, do you want one of these? And she goes, it's deodorant, Dad. Do you think I smell? I go, no, I swear to God. But your brother has deodorant. So I thought maybe you would want deodorant too.
Yeah.
And that's how we got deodorant.
And she did it. She started using it.
Yeah, but she was on to me. Like,
Yeah.
You know.
Right. I like it. I remember the first time I fooled around with my wife, we took a bike ride over the Brooklyn Bridge, and it was summer, and she had on like a sundress. And then we went back to her place, and we started fooling around the couch, and she had a little armpit,
I like that,
smell.
Though.
It's like
that's how it's really supposed to be.
Yeah,
they're supposed to have hairy armpits too. I like that too.
Yeah,
like that. It's an extra turn on because very few people have it.
What about feet? How do you feel about women's feet?
I try not to make that a issue. You know.
So it's not a deal breaker if they're bad, and it's not a turn on if they're good.
No, and you don't have to look at them if they're bad.
Yeah.
You don't make that a thing. If they got weird square toes, big square toes, I'll tell you what, the deal breaker, and I hate to say this because there's a lot of nice people, which their face is great, and then their legs are just like this.
Check.
It's unusual, though.
Yeah.
It doesn't go with the rest of their body,
right.
Like from the knee down.
The cankles,
Yeah, but bigger than that.
Right.
Yeah, they're healthy, they work out, but they got this weird thing. You know, that's like when a man, you know, my buddy Steve Tisch, it's funny.
Billionaire?
Yeah. My favorite best man I've ever had at my wedding, Godfather to his kids. He's got a huge butt. So when he gets fat, his ass gets so big.
Right.
And that's the worst thing for a guy.
Yeah.
To get that huge pear body.
I know. Some people just have a body part, and as soon as they put weight on, that's where it goes. You know, like I have a friend, her arms, as soon as she, like her body's normal, and her arms just swell up when she puts on weight.
Oh, yeah. 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 And when people lose weight, it comes out of their face first.
Yeah.
Their body is still,
Have you ever thought about going on Ozempic? I mean, you're not overweight.
No, I mean,
you're a little puffy. But
yeah.
You're not.
I need to, you know, I had lost 80 pounds. I looked great after my stroke. I had a little stroke.
That was like 80 pounds?
Yeah. I was like, what could have caused this?
Damn.
And I had blood thinners and I'd lost 80 pounds. This guy
named no Ozempic.
Charles D'Angelo in St. Louis. No. Ozempic wasn't invented. I don't think. But let me say this about Ozempic. More power to you. Because I know a lot of guys that are like us, addicts, that were big and start taking Ozempic, and they don't crave that either. They don't obsess on drugs.
Oh,
ever.
I heard that. That's right.
So that's kind of a miracle thing. You know, I think that'll they'll find out about it where you don't obsess about food.
Right.
And then, but here's what happens with fat guys. They're like, I miss eating. I miss they force themselves. They force food on themselves.
Yeah.
Because they quit doing it.
Right.
You know, because we always think we need more food than we do.
Are you exercising?
Yes.
What do you do?
I do the recumbent bike hour a day.
Nice.
You know, plus we play.
What do you get the heart rate up to?
That's the thing. I can't get up very high just because my pulse, resting pulse is like 50, 48. I get it up to 120.
That's good.
Do the best I can.
Yeah.
I'm hard. It's hard.
Yeah.
Because I'm sweating. And then he played basketball with my son and his buddies. That's hard. That's
right.
We play. There's no fouls called.
Yeah.
You know, and my lesson from them, watching them play at school, every kid that gets the ball shoots it.
Yeah.
There's no passing.
Right.
It's full court. They shoot it, the three.
Are you play full court with them?
I have, but we play half court at my house. And you got to pass.
Yeah.
Because my daughter and I could beat him and any one of his friends. Because they.
No, when my son was in school, the coach made them make two touches before you
Yeah,
shot.
That's a great rule.
Yeah, right.
That's a great rule.
All right, time for Fitz, Fastballs with Fitz. This is a quick thing we do at the end, and then we're going to talk about your dates that you have coming up. Mm-hmm.
What time is it, do you think?
1:20.
Okay, perfect. I'm on the spectrum.
This will take 7
or
8 minutes.
I love you. Let's do it.
By the way, you know it's a really good tool with the Asperger's and ADHD? There's a thing called the Pomodoro technique, and I'll give you the app on your phone. Mm-hmm. And what it does is it sets a timer. Mm-hmm. Your phone won't go off. Nothing happens on your phone for 25 minutes. You don't check your email. You don't do anything except work on what you're doing. And then after 25 minutes, the alarm goes off, and you have 5 minutes to return emails, take a dump, have a snack, and then the alarm goes off again. You do another 25 minutes. I do it for like 3 hours a day with writing, with anything, paying bills. And you do it in chunks, and it allows you to not get obsessed.
That's really smart.
That's really fart?
Smart. But I'll forget about it, be able to get a hold of you. That's a 70 app.
Okay.
I got an app about brain health, but I keep forgetting. Do you take that brain vitamin?
We're literally in the middle of Fast Dogs or Fits. There are two types of people in the world. Go.
Oh. People that have sense of humor.
Yeah.
People that don't.
All right. All right. It's amazing. I work at a Gold's Gym where Arnold works out in Venice. And I swear to God, I've tried to joke around with people. I've been there for 6 years. Nobody ever jokes around with me. I'll make a joke and they'll just, you know, like one guy was going for some weights at the same time as me and I go rock, paper, scissors. And he just stared me down and then he walked away. I'm like, what's wrong with these people?
Maybe they don't realize you're funny. Maybe they think you're being like serious. Like, let's compete, rock, paper, scissors. It is bad. It is bad. In a relationship, that's a deal breaker.
Who's your best Asian friend?
Man, my best Asian friend. Probably my brother's husband.
Your brother's gay. Husband,
yeah. Yes, he's gay. He has a husband. Been together a long time, man. Long time.
Really? That's his name? Long time?
No, his name's Michael.
Oh, all right. When's the last time you apologized?
No. I apologized to my kids last Thursday because I said I would get something organized that I didn't. And then because it's very important to apologize to them, and it's very important for them to apologize to me. My daughter never has to do it because she doesn't do anything wrong, but my son to learn that. And I show that by apologizing to whomever and try to be in front of them, whoever's around. If I'm sorry, if we, you know, I apologize a lot.
Make amends.
Now make amends. Yeah.
Six steps.
A living amends, man.
What step is that? You don't know your steps?
Fifth step, baby.
I love it.
Yeah, but it's such a great thing. And again, not talking about my ex, but she, once in a while, she would apologize. I'm sorry that, and she has this thing, whatever thing is, she's like, I think we should take the kids to Disneyland together like a family. And I go, you swatted us. She goes, why do you live in the past? I go, it was last night. For real. Like, she's that person. Okay, I'm human.
Wow.
That's her apology. And it moves on and does
something.
And she says she's got a sponsor. I don't know. But it's very important to sincerely apologize. I've taught my son
that.
I have
to model that for your kids.
Yeah.
Really,
my
strong
son's like, I'm sorry, okay? I go, no.
No, okay.
That's not it. That's not it.
You can't say okay, and you can't say, I'm sorry that you had a problem with.
Yeah, that fucking pisses me
and
off right there.
You can't say, I'm sorry, but you.
Right. And you can't.
You say, I'm sorry, and you land it, and you own it, and then they will respect you for it.
Yeah.
And they will apologize more when you apologize.
Yeah.
As long as you don't make it, you know, conditional.
Yeah. I think my dad apologized once or twice, and it stunned us kids.
Yeah.
He sincerely apologized. My brother ate our babysitter's hearing aid, swallowed it. He was a baby. We had to wait for it to poop it out. And my dad had yelled at me and my sister. And then he came back and said, it wasn't your fault.
You know what you should have done when he was shitting out the hearing aid is, like, make fart noises into the hearing aid while it was coming out.
I mean, how do you make fart noises?
Oh, no, it's the opposite. You would hear him taking a shit.
Yeah, but our babysitter was like, my dad's like, it's all going to work out. Huh? What? Daisy. She was loved my dad. But he did apologize a couple times, and it really stuck with me more than anything else.
You apologized to me when you got here late.
I really meant it.
Very effusively.
I apologized in advance. Yeah. I did. And I wondered, do I feel less bad that I'm running 12 minutes late because it's Greg and we're old buddies? I hope not.
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, this studio is a little tricky to get to because it's not on the highway.
I turned the wrong way on this.
Yeah, so I expect people to be late, Jim.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, final thing, and then we're going to plug your dates. What's the hackiest bit that you've ever done in your stand-up act?
Oh, fuck. There's a few, but the worst thing I ever did, when I was in college in Iowa, Joel Hodgson came down and performed, and I opened up for him. Joel Hodgson is this great comedian, a prop comedian.
Yeah, I remember
He was
on
Saturday Night Live. He was so different.
Yep.
you know, his cadence is okay, whatever. And when I moved to Minneapolis, I was performing and Joel came to the show. And so he said, what do you think of him? I go, I think he's me. Because I literally stole everything he did. I became a prop comedian. He stayed at my house. He didn't want to pay for a hotel. I'm like, how do I do it? You got to think of something original. You know, I'm like, I got goldfish. I'll be that, the goldfish guy.
Yeah.
But my cadence was exactly like
but
his.
But you didn't take his material.
No, I wish.
Yeah.
No, but there's always jokes about, you know, a lot of fat chick jokes.
And, yeah.
But they're truth with me. So
right.
It is for my real life.
Yeah, okay.
You know.
Tom Arnold will be coming to see you in your town. He will be in Springfield, Missouri on June 6th and 7th, Indy, June 11th, Kansas City, June 13th, 14th, Shelbyville, Kentucky, June 16th, and then coming to Raleigh, North Carolina, Atlanta, Dalton, Georgia, Lowell, Arkansas. Oh, that's a fun gig. I did that. East Hampton, New York. Ooh, that's fancy. Philadelphia, PA, Beverly, Mass, Austin, Tampa, Bozeman, Montana, Dallas. So many more dates. You are fucking hitting the road.
There's 100
this year.
I haven't toured like this. I can't, maybe 7 or 8. Never like this.
Wow.
And I'm so grateful. And it's my crazy ex-wife comedy tour, which makes it helpful. But my agent, I don't have a stand-up agent.
I noticed you have your opening act is booking your gigs.
My opening act. Let me tell you what happened. But I have acting agents, but there's no, and my manager's, long-time manager, like, I got this.
Right.
We'll book you. It'll be easy. Use our company. And so nothing was happening. And then a month later, he's like, okay, here's 5,000 places you could perform.
Yeah.
Casinos, whatever. Take your time, look through it, see if it, I go, and I wrote back immediately, all of them, any of them.
Yeah.
I need the money.
Right.
And then a month later, he's like, you know, you should update your bio. And I'm like, he's doing that stalling thing.
Uh-huh.
So I met this guy, Max Mizell. He opened for me down in San Diego. And he said, how could I do more shows with you?
Yeah.
And I thought about it. I said, book a tour. You book a tour for me all over the country. You can open up for me all over the country.
Perfect.
And he loves it.
I love it.
He loves it. He does it into details with the flights.
Yeah.
And he deals with the money guy.
Well, you know, Louis C.K. got dropped during the whole fiasco, got dropped by his agent, his manager, his booking agent. Mm-hmm. And he took a year off, and then he said to his assistant, why don't you start booking me? And she goes, I'm not an agent. I've never booked it. He goes, start booking me. That'll be your new job. You'll get 10% of the money.
Yeah.
So she just learned how to be an agent, and he just played Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
And she got 10% of that because she booked that
Whoa,
gig.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She's booking them in major theaters all over the world.
Yeah, but that says a lot about the ability. You just got to kind of want to do it.
Right.
And I was thinking, oh, people don't like my manager, can't get me booked. And this kid gets on there. He said everybody responded.
Yeah,
like everybody.
Right,
that was good for me. And it's also good to go out and do them.
Yeah.
And so it's a good feeling.
All right. Well, good luck on the roads. Thank you again so much
for coming in.
What a pleasure.
Love you. Thank you, man.
Too.
Thank you, buddy.
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line, now 20% lower. Family plans, also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone, all with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.